the recording of that was quite profound, an experience for everyone.
Yeah.
I suppose I'm interested in how you might compare something like that to Glint, which is domestic in a completely different way. And there's less of that sense of the sound coming from the room, in a way.
Well, Glint to me is like a. I have described this to Sterling, my partner, as an action movie, because you have all these characters coming at you. It's quite an active release, and I feel that the word Glint is really how it should be taken. It's kind of this diamond heart, but splinters in shards of light in all kinds of directions. It's very spirited. I feel Such and Such has this this very grand and very serious, vast night sky, whereas Glint has moments of a lot of levity as well. Those that listen to Glint will chuckle from time to time at what's going on there, because it's quite action driven and dream sequences. That's how I would describe it. Ross.
I wanted to say that both of them thrive, I think, on exhaustion. There is something that happens, you alluded to it earlier, that those long improvisations, one gets so tired and a conscious mind shuts down, you know. And other things can happen. It's kind of vague, but it definitely works. And I just wanted to mention, because it's slightly related to that, that Jungians talk about the gambler archetype. When you're under a lot of, in this case, under stress, when the recording appears not to be happening, which has never been true at my place, so I reassure you. But in other contexts, like at the ABC that night with Richard, I was pretty sure that we were not recording, and if we were, it wasn't going to air anyway because of the chaos in the studio. But that chaos, I think, actually, according to the Jungians, that it encourages synchronistic events which tend to cluster around that kind of panic, where you run out of options completely.
Right.
And I'm fascinated with that.
Yeah.
So, both the fatigue and the panic.
Yeah. Because, the more you have been playing, the more you coexist without this kind of your bag of tricks is already spent, it's not that you have to surprise anyone, but you open up to a kind of a coexistence, and that's how I see Such and Such. After 3 hours of playing, it's late at night, we are just being together with these sounds, and sound becomes an activity, just a way of being. It's not performance. It's just like how we are hearing and acting and living, So became for me a very truthful way of making music. And the same with Glint, because, I'm playing alone in my house. Ross is in his. We are sharing the same time at night time, but we cannot hear each other. But we have that mindset that somewhere outside Ross or Ed is there, that brought a new mindset to me as well. Coexisting, but also with that third element of chance, the unknown. The out there.
Yeah. One thing I get a lot from this conversation is And I feel like I've tried to explain this to maybe students or other people in my life, of experimental music as being almost a mode of living in a way. We live out the kind of the relationships of our lives through our music in some way. It's just in a way that's very legible to others. And I feel like, yeah, the way you talk about it, Eduardo, especially, I think it's just, it's very, it's quite profound. It's a good, it's you know, the work is the living in a way, and living is the work.
The thing is that when I became interested in this thing we call experimental music, that's really the appeal, that because it was, took me to, you know, sounds that I always loved, but I didn't know I could use them, you know, like from being a kid. You know, there are sounds that call your attention, or you just make up words or make up songs, but that remains there. It's just kid stuff. It's just like silly stuff. But this music finally gave me a way of connecting and having that come to the fore, and maybe more to the fore than my trained side of things, you know. Yeah. Because without that attitude, I don't think it would work, at least for me, you know. Yeah.
Ross, do you have any thoughts on any of this?
Yeah. I think the name Outcome Unknown is so beautiful for these synchronistic creations, because this is the ultimate form of Outcome Unknown. It's different to improvising freely just in the room, you know. One can feel where it's going, and, you know, in at least in the broadest sense, and that. But so I think the name of your organization is so beautiful. It's just
well, I owe that to John Cage. I'm just swapping words that John Cage wrote.
He knew. Yeah. I'm sure.
Yeah. I think to come over to the question that I asked of Eduardo, like, do you feel that, that outcome unknownness, if you will, is, in what ways do you find that kind of life-affirming practice?
It can't be otherwise. You know, I feel like I'm saturated in that. I have the image that comes to mind of just birds that fly at night in their millions, you know, and that which we know nothing about very much, but there's something about the this music and that which always reminds me of that. And it's like night with eyes and wings.
That's an incredibly beautiful image to play an excerpt from Glint. So we will talk a little bit after this, but this is an excerpt from Glint, Eduardo Cossio and Ross Bolliter's forthcoming album, to give a plug that they are releasing the album at an album launch party on Saturday the 3rd of May at Wireless Hill Museum from 4 to 6 p.m. So go and vote before you go to that gig. And it also features Lyndon Blue and Ben Buchanan. This is an excerpt from the first track of the 4 on Glint forthcoming. You're on Difficult Listening, RTR-FM.
Yeah.
So this is being launched on Saturday, 3rd of May. Eduardo, what can you tell me about the gig? It's a wonderful location.
The place is Wireless Hill Museum. It's a very beautiful venue on Wireless Hill, Ardros. And we have two acts, well, three acts, including Ross and I. We have Lyndon Blue and Ben Buchanan. And I asked them to play this gig because I know they have this very open-ended approach to songwriting. I know Lyndon will be bringing new elements into their music. I know they have been wanting to have the chance of playing this new work live. And then Ben is releasing an album Wednesday at the Bird, I believe. So yeah, fresh off that release. So yeah, 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. And then Ross and I will be performing. Ross on different accordions. And I have been playing cithers just without any electronics, just amplified. And I'm really enjoying reconnecting with the acousticness of these instruments. Cithers, not to be confused with the sitar. The cithers are just sounding boxes with lots of strings on them. Very simple instruments used in folk music. And I obtain drones, very tough and very beautiful drones out of them.
They're incredibly beautiful, very shimmery. I find shimmery is my favorite word to describe them. It's like a, I feel like I can only explain it by also making hand gestures of just like the kind of hand gesture you make when you like you're thinking of lots of money or something. I don't know how else to describe it. It's like fire, maybe.
The thing is that the way I play these instruments, they kind of play on their own. Mm. You know, I kind of put EVOs, these gadgets that will create a kind of like a feedback sound. So I find that drone that they play quite, you know, I'm very attached to that. So it's really a lot of they doing their stuff. I'm kind of in interaction with them, but I like the, you know, it's their own thing as well.
Ross, you're bringing in several accordions. Dare I ask how many?
Probably for this event, two or three. Okay. I'm just trying to work on
the normal amount of accordions to bring to a gig.
Yeah. Well, bass accordion will be one which you heard on the previous one, and the Fico Seco, which I love beyond loving, accordion, and I have several others there. A free bass accordion, which got 180 buttons on the left hand, and you can play incredibly high and incredibly low, and that. Maybe that one for the third.
So I think your last public gig, and maybe your first public gig in quite a while, was at Audible Edge a few weeks ago, and you played in the courtyard of Tita Bakery.
That's
and,
right.
And it was such a beautiful experience to hear you talk so lovingly about your accordions and the people around them and the people who taught you accordion. It was very, very touching.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. How did you feel about that gig?
It was wonderful. I love that area. I love the sounds of the area. And you were saying that was where the Coolbaroo Club?
Yes, the Coolbaroo Club.
At 1 James Street, which would have stretched all the way down to there.
I was
so happy to be in that area. And also the informality of the gig, like it encouraged a gig in that sense.
In the traditional sense,
traditional sense, it's impossible to escape. So it encouraged, I guess, an informality and tunes and that, because I wanted to play some Italian music as part of that. And Tony Stefanoni, his favourite piece I didn't actually get to play, but it was called Sharpshooter's March. He used to say, Italian accent, Sharpshooters. Play Sharpshooters. Yum bum 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 bum
Paid with the left hand.
If you don't mind me sharing this story, Ross, it's one of my favourite stories about your accordion playing, that you you applied to go to the Conservatorium of Music with the accordion playing Beethoven's Moonlight Sonata, if I believe.
Bach's Staccato and Fugue.
Oh, Bach's Staccato and Fugue. Oh, my apologies. And if I believe that they said you could come into the conservatorium, but maybe not playing that instrument.
Actually, yes, that's right. It was Sir Frank Calloway. It was University of Western Australia, and he said, "Yeah, we'll take you, but you can't play that thing around here."
Oh, what a time!
Yeah.
That's extraordinary. I'm thinking we'll wrap up there. But before we do, I just wanted to take a moment to reflect with you both on Alan Lamb. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, for those who didn't know, Alan Lamb passed away last week. And personally, when I think of the two most influential and important musicians to come from Western Australia to really think about place and, you know, the impact of something like Western Australia on our music, I think of you, Ross, and I think of Alan Lamb. So I wondered if either of you had any thoughts to share about Alan Lamb, his impact and friendship, that kind of thing.
Alan came to my place and brought his work of the recording, the Wire recording, and we put it on. I could not believe my ears. It was what blew me away was the depth, but also the grandeur of it. It was huge, dark, and yeah. I still have such vivid memories. That was just the first time I'd heard it, and that never left me. And Alan and I never played together. We always talked about it, but, you know, those kind of things, we always talk about it, but you actually don't do it, you know? I suppose the talk becomes the rationale after a while, but I got Alan to come to the improv camp for kids, which we used to run at Parkerville and Bicton and other places, and you get 50 kids ranging from age 7 to 17 and do improv with them, and also unicycling, had all kinds of other theatre stuff, surrealist poetry, you know, cut-ups and all this stuff, but mainly music. And Alan brought his wires up and rigged up a wire there, and I remember that so vividly. And it actually it snapped at one point. We were really worried, but the kids were so excited. it was wonderful. Aww. And yeah, he'll be very missed.
Eduardo, do you have any thoughts on his work?
Oh, well, I always found it very inspiring how Alan was able to tap into that phenomena, you know, that it's already there, it's around us. I mean, he would tap into these telephone wires and amplify them and tap the wind and tap birds and, you know, that are passing by. So these wires are some kind of conduit into something bigger and vaster, you know, and he made this music that almost has no ego, you know. I mean, he's really in communion with something larger. And I always found that that approach to music making quite impeccable. Yeah.
I couldn't have said it better myself. So I thought we'd end with a piece by him. In fact, I'm going to dedicate the next hour or 49 minutes to Alan Lamb's work. Ross Bolitar, Eduardo Cossio, thank you so much for coming in. I've really enjoyed this conversation.
Yeah, thank you, Mike.
Just a final plug, they're playing Saturday, 3rd of May, Wireless Hill Museum at 4 to 6 p.m., releasing their album Glint. This is Alan Lamb with Beauty from his archival recordings.